Perek Zayin, Mishnah Yud Gimel. Till now, we've been introduced to a number of different components and halachas of how to, you know, do the Karban Pesach performance and how to eat it. And with this, the last mission of the Perek, we're going to conclude a couple of more halachas. So we have to understand three things. Number one, that when a Karban Pesach is brought, it was brought in a group. Now, what the Mishnah is going to teach us here is, number one, that group is actually allowed to be divided into two before they sit down to eat the Karban Pesach, and even divide themselves into two houses. That's permitted. The second thing is that if you have one person from, you know, the group who wants to bounce from group to group, let's say you had a group of 30 people, it was divided into 15, 15 each, and then one guy wants to bounce around from group to group, that's prohibited. And also, you know, let's say one of the groups of the 30, so the 30 was divided into two, you have 15 and 15, one of them want to eat part of the carbon in one house, part of the carbon in another house, that's also prohibited. So three rules. The big group that you start off with, let's just say, for example, 30 people could be divided into two before they start and eat in separate houses. That's okay. But you can't have, you know, one person from one group bounce around from group to group. That's prohibited. And you can't have one group bounce around from house to house. That would also be prohibited. So with these three principles in mind, let's wrap up Perek Zayin and take it away with the last Mishnah. Perek Zayin, I'm sorry, and take away with the last Mishnah, Mishnah Yud Gimel. Shtei chaburos shehayu ochlos. You have two groups that were eating the Karban Pesach. B'bayis echad, in one house. Okay, so two groups eating one Karban Pesach in one house. For example, they say a big ulam, a big, you know, hall. So, elu hovchen es p'neim helach ve'ochlen, ve'elu hovchen es p'neim helach ve'ochlen. Meaning that they don't have to be looking at each other and focused on each other as if they're in one group. Rather, what they could do is they're permitted to turn their faces, you know, this one turns their faces to the right, the other ones turn their faces to the left. They could appear like they're two groups, and it's not a problem because they're, you know, they're set in one spot. They have their group, the other ones have their group, and that's okay. So if you have 30 people that they started off with, and then they divide it into 15 and 15, and they, you know, separate themselves by looking at their right side of the wall and the left side of the wall, you know, so if that's how they divide themselves, that's okay, because they're still in one spot. V'hameicham b'emtza. And then they used to have a minug, a custom where they would mix hot water into their wine to dilute the wine. So the Mishnah is coming to teach us that you could have this mecham, this urn of the hot water, placed in the middle of the two groups. Say one group facing the right, one group facing the left, and then you have this urn in the middle in order to make it easy for the two groups to access the water to dilute their wine. And even though it's a hafsaka, it's a separation between the two groups, it's not a problem. Because we said two groups, one group could separate themselves into two as long as they're stationary and they don't move around. Ooh, kishin ha-shamash, when there's a shamash, a servant, let's say he's serving the two groups. Omid limzog, he gets up to dilute the wine. Meaning, for example, let's just say we have a servant who's eating his Karban Pesach in the first group, right? And then he gets up in the middle of his meal to dilute the wine and serve it to the second group, because he has to eat his Karban Pesach, but he's also a servant. So he has to be careful. He kopes its piv. He's got to close his mouth. He can't even swallow what's in his mouth, because it'll appear when he's going to serve the second group as if he's a part of that group, right? And then he'll be eating in two different groups. We said one person can't bounce around from group to group. So if there's a servant in one of the groups who's having his Karban Pesach and he gets up to serve the other group because that's his job, he's got to close his mouth, not swallow what's in his mouth, so it doesn't appear like he's joining a new group. And even when he serves the water to dilute the wine in the other groups, umachzer es panav, he has to turn his face towards the group that he's a part of. So that, again, people shouldn't think that he's eating in two different groups, because he said it's also, it's prohibited for a person to eat in two different groups. So it's very strict. This servant's going to have to, you know, get up. He can't swallow what's in his mouth. Preferably don't even have anything in his mouth. And even when he serves the second group, he's got to have his face towards his primary group, so people don't think he's, you know, eating in one place and eating in another place. And we said that one person cannot be eating in two different groups. And he's got to do this. He's got to turn his face towards his original group. So until he comes back. So he walks to the second group. He serves them with his face still turned to the group that he's a part of. And once he returns, then he can eat. And when he comes back, he can eat what was in his mouth. And he can turn his face back to normal, because now he's part of his group and he came back. And that's okay. That's perfectly fine. Now, the exception here, so would be a kala, a bride. If you have a kala who's embarrassed, you know, to turn her face, so let's, we're not talking about she's serving anybody. Let's say she's just part of one of the groups. So, hofechet es panav ochelas, she's permitted to turn her face to another side and eat, and it's not considered a shinim makam, meaning, meaning the rules like this. Let's just say she starts eating her meal. There's two groups, A and B, and the bride is part of group A. She starts eating her meal, you know, just standard, and in the middle of the meal, she turns her face towards the other group. So maybe we think, she's turning her face to the other group, maybe she wants to join them. The lach is that she could do it, because she's just turning away from the group that she's a part of, because she's embarrassed to eat in the open. And therefore, you know, since she's a bride, she's a kala, we save her that embarrassment and we let her just eat in private. And private means she's part of her group, but she has her face turned the other way. And even though she started facing her group and then later in the meal she turned to the other group, it's fine because she's still stationary, she didn't move. Whereas, you know, some commentaries will say that the regular people of the group, let's say we have group A and group B, they shouldn't be looking one way, looking the other way when they're eating. They should just be focused on their group. Otherwise, again, people are going to think that they're going from group to group. So that's the idea. So the laws are pretty strict over here, but the point is we're giving over a general principle. Number one, one group can be divided into two and have their carbon in two different houses, or in one house, it's two different sides of the house, as long as they're stationary. And then one person shouldn't be bouncing from group to group, and one group shouldn't be bouncing from house to house. And even one person, we find that there are rules that are, you know, that tell him how to act, if he has to go to the other group to serve them. And then, of course, a kala is permitted to, you know, face whichever side she wants if she needs some privacy. And we don't think that she's just, you know, trying to look at what the other person has to join the other group. Okay? With that in mind, we conclude Parak Zion, all the Karbanos Halachos, which is very new and intriguing. And we move on to Parak Ches. Parak Ches, Mishnah Aleph. Ha'isha, a woman. Bizman Shahib Beis Bala, when she's in her husband's house. Shachala Bala, Shachala Avia, Tocha Mishal Bala. Excuse me. So the rule is that if you have a woman who her husband shechted the Karban Pesach with her in mind, and her father shechted the Karban Pesach with her in mind. So the halacha is that only one person could be shechting for her. She can't have two people shechting for her. So as long as she's in her husband's house, and this scenario came up where both her husband shechted for her and her father shechted for her, so then of course she eats from her husband because she's in her husband's house. But halacha regel rishon, if the first yomtiv, you know, the first Pesach after the chasan, after the wedding, she goes, the minhag was she would go to her father's house right after the wedding. For the first Pesach, she would go to her father's house. So then, if that's the case, so then if it's a, then shachad alaviyah, shachad alabala, both her husband and her father do shecht for her. So then, he, in this scenario, tochal b'makom, she wrote that she could actually pick which one she wants to be motzi by. Meaning, the Bartanur explains that until now she wasn't always running to her father's house. She was hanging out by her husband's house, by her you know, her new married house with her husband. Sometimes she'd go to her father, but she wasn't running there. So even though the minig is that the first yomtiv they'd stay by the in-laws, by her parents, and you know, when it comes out, when Pesach comes out in the first year, she goes to her parents. Still, since she's not always running to her parents, so we kind of give her a choice. She could be mostly with her father's karban, or she could be mostly with her husband's karban. Because on one hand, she's always hanging out with her husband. On the other hand, it's the first Yom Tov she normally goes to her father for. So in this kind of scenario, she could actually pick which one she wants to be Yotzi with. Yes, and what about an orphan? She shechtu alav apotropsin, that his two apotropuses. Apotropus was like the godfather, like the overseer. So let's say he has two of them, and they both shecht for him. So again, you can only have one person performing the mitzvah for you if you're like a minor, if you're a yasa, if you're an orphan. So now they both did it for him. So which one does he go by? Again, Yochal Makom Shurotza, again, since he has no specific ties to either or, he could pick which one he wants. So in the previous case with the Kala, she lives with her husband most of the year, right, or the whole year. And then the first Yom Tov, she goes to her father's house. So there's like a tie to both of them she could pick. So here too also, this orphan has a tie to both of the godfathers, you know, not one more than the other. And therefore, he could pick which one he wants to eat his Karban Pesach with. Eved, a servant, shoshnei shutfin, that belong to two partners, and then each partner, each owner, shechted for him and mine. So lo yochal mishoshnei, he can't eat now from either of them. Whoa, why? Because here, not from either of them. Because who gave permission for one of them to do a Karban Pesach for him, you know, while the other one still owned him? And then same vice versa. So both of their intentions to make this Karban Pesach for this servant is no good. Why? Because each of them only owns half of him. And they don't own the other half. So who gave you the right to shef for him if you don't own the other half of the Eved? So the only takana, the only way to fix this is if they both agree, both partners agree that it should be considered like, you know, we could both, you know, kind of own the other portion of the Eved for this purpose of making the karban, then it would work. Otherwise, you'd have to just, you know, start all over and bring his own karban, or have just one of the partners bring a karban for him. But as long as they're both doing it and they both have separate ownership, so then the guy's stuck. So again, either they both have to agree to one ownership just for the karban, or they have to start over and just have one of the partners make the karban for him. Actually, I'm sorry, I got to correct myself. The actual explain over here a little bit different, slightly different. The way it works is that he can't eat from either of them until they both agree that he should go with one or the other. So that's how they come out with. So you have partner A, partner B. They both agree that he should go either with me, partner A, or me, or the other one, partner B. That's how they come out. Okay, fine. So that's the solution. And then lastly, Misha chetzu eved v'chetzu ben chorin l'yochal misha rabo. So we have a person who's a half of a servant, half of a free person. How's that possible? So he has two owners. One owner frees him, and one owner still keeps him as a servant. So technically now he's half freed and half a slave. So we say the halacha is don't eat from the portion of the master that made the karban for you. Rather, eat from the portion that would be coming from yourself as if you're free. Because since the halacha is that once this happens, when one owner frees him, the halacha is the other owner is forced to free him as well. He has to write from a get shichur, a certain kind of document that frees him. And the halacha is that even if you didn't give him this document yet, we look at it as if he's a free person. So he eats as if he's eating from his own portion of the freedom, and then that would work in this kind of scenario. Because again, we say that even though the other master didn't free him yet, he's forced to. And then we look at it as if he already receives his contract to let him go free, and then he's a free man. And he just eats the Karban Pesach as if it came from himself as a free person. And that wraps up Mishnah Aleph. So practically speaking, this last example, where the servant has two masters, one freed him and one didn't, and then the one that didn't, you know, made a karban for him, and then he made his own karban for himself, he would use the karban that he made for himself and would go even on the portion of himself that's owned by the other master, because we look at it as if that portion was already freed, because the owner's going to have to force him to be freed anyway. So his owner that still has ownership over him does a karban for him, and he brings his own karban. We look at it as if he's totally free, and he just uses his own karban.